You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, happy Tuesday, Wednesday, actually. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. Today's episode is brought to you by Kinetico Water, because joining me, Tony East, your host on the other line, is play-by-play announcer extraordinaire Chris Denary. Chris, happy to have you on. How are you enjoying your first day of Pacers vacation?
Wow, it's I've really enjoyed it, though. I was up early. I did early radio about 8 o'clock with Big Joe and Greg Rakestraw on 1070 The Fan, and then I had a workout, and I think I got to bed at 3:15. But you know, after a big win like it was, hey, it all was good. But yeah, it is odd. I mean, you've got to enjoy these next 3 or 4 days, because once Saturday comes, I think the Pacers play every other day with some back-to-backs thrown in through mid-December until they have 2 days off. So you have to enjoy this time off.
That's how their stretch was up to now, too, right? They had every other day up through the Thunder game and then 2 days off before a back-to-back. It just never stopped.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, and from a player standpoint, from our standpoint as broadcasters, I mean, it's a constant preparation. I mean, you know, somebody will say, well, hey, you have a day off between the games, but you use the day off to prepare for the upcoming game. So, so it's really looking forward to the next few days, though. I have a lot on my plate. We have the Come to Our House Thanksgiving for 800 people from various shelters across Indianapolis on Wednesday afternoon. I'm emceeing an event for the Humane Society of Hamilton County on Thursday night. And then I'm speaking at an elementary school in Westfield very early on Friday morning. So I still am filling my time with a lot of community relations stuff.
All right, your groupies are going to know where you're going to be now.
That's right.
I don't know if you just gave it all away.
Yeah.
So let's talk some Pacers. You're in year 14, right, of covering the
team? Yeah, year 14.
Year 14. Is this the most injured you've ever seen the team at the same time?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I just look back to last year. I think I made the note that they started their sixth different lineup a year ago in game 51. And they started their sixth different lineup on Saturday night in game 13 against Milwaukee.
Good Lord.
You know, they've all just hit, you know, at the same time. I mean, I think about some injuries back when I first started. Mike Dunleavy missed a lot of time with a knee injury. You know, Danny Granger was in and out with an injury. But I don't ever remember, you know, five guys at a time, all missing time and all critical guys. I mean, if you think about the last two games, if you were to go back to the beginning of the season and throw Victor Oladipo in there, basically it's your top five players in the backcourt. Because remember, Edmund Sumner was in the rotation. Jeremy Lamb is your starting two guard. Malcolm Brogdon's your starting point guard. TJ McConnell was backing him up. And then you have Victor. Those are five of your top players all missing time. So, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
It's crazy, because I understand how, you know, one injury can, in theory, lead to another, like some guy's overextended or someone's playing in a role they're not familiar with. But I also have never seen it like this before. And yet at the same time, I see the Warriors and the Pelicans, where something is just must be in the air this year, because some of these teams are barely even fielding rosters right now.
Yeah, I think I saw something on Twitter the other day. Somebody listed a complete roster of guys that were injured, and it was guys that were out for an extended period of time. And there were, you know, some big names. I mean, all we have to do is look at Golden State, and they've got their starting backcourt out. So it is pretty significant. I mean, Caris LeVert, we didn't see him the other night. He's out for 5 weeks, you know, with the broken thumb. So there are a lot of guys out. Yeah, New Orleans dressed, you know, 7 or 8 for a game. If you looked at the Houston game on Friday night, I looked down from my perch, and we're up high at the Toyota Center, and I couldn't find Ryan Anderson, who ironically they waived today. They only looked like they had 4 guys on the bench. So, yeah, there are a lot of teams with limited numbers right now because of the injuries.
And I think some of that, well, actually, on the flip side of that, I think that is the main reason why I look at 8-6 right now, and I can't help but be impressed with this team this year. I know their schedule's been about as easy as it could possibly be outside of Houston and Milwaukee. But the fact that they, you know, this last game, Nazmi Trulong, who Lord even knows, you know, the Pacers schedule, they're two-way guys, like in the days I'll be with the team, but he didn't think he'd ever be the backup this year, is getting significant minutes. And, you know, they're missing, like you just said, they're basically their five best backcourt guys. And all of a sudden they just dominate a Nets team that was supposed to be pretty good this year. I just, even with the injuries, it's hard not to be looking around after 14 games and going, wow, they've done pretty good so far.
Well, yeah, you have to be impressed. I mean, you know, Orlando now, I guess somebody could argue that San Antonio, they're, what, four games under 500, but Orlando easily handled a what has been a good San Antonio team in Orlando last week. And, you know, the Pacers went down there and beat them, you know, by double figures. I've been very impressed. I mean, when you look at what they've had to deal with, the injuries, and, you know, bringing a guy like Nazmi Trulong, who gets a knock on the door on Friday night at midnight after he's played in Portland, Maine, and says, hey, you need to get to Indianapolis because you're the backup point guard tomorrow against the Bucks. I do think it says something. I think it says something about the culture that they've created. It is that next man up type mentality. I think it can only help this team as they move forward because you have so many guys that know they can play and know they can contribute because it's a long season. It's 82 games and you're going to have guys with bumps and bruises, but this is a good sign. You can only play what the schedule makers give you. And the schedule makers put this schedule in front of the Pacers. And I think at 8-6, they've done quite well.
I agree. And it's funny that you say that because I kind of feel weird about the schedule, like using it as a crutch of their record because they're still just like pummeling some of these teams. Like you said, like they destroyed the Nets last night. They did an incredible second half against the Magic. They just had some games that just, the Thunder, you know, they're an okay team. They just smoke them. And like, even if, you know, the Pacers have played an easy schedule, the fact that they're dismantling teams that were, you know, that have good players and are supposed to be good is impressive in its own way too.
Yeah, I mean, OKC, what goes the other night, Paul George needs to hit a shot for the Clippers to beat his old team. I mean, that's the same OKC team that came into Bankers Life Fieldhouse and got run out of the Fieldhouse. So, yeah, I mean, you can get into all the comparisons and, you know, this team's played this schedule. I mean, I heard somebody on NBA radio today talking about the Lakers, and apparently, you know, the Lakers have had one of the easier schedules like the Pacers. Well, what are they, 11-2 or 11-3? They still have an outstanding record. So again, you can only deal with what you're given and you've got to make the most of it. There'd be a lot more questions through 14 games if this team was 5-9, but they're not. They're 8-6. And quite honestly, they had a real shot to probably be 10-4. The Charlotte game and the Detroit game, both on the road, two-point losses, games that they had significant leads, or at least in the Detroit game, they had a four-point lead with about a minute to play, and we know they had the big lead in Charlotte. I mean, they're not that far away from being 10-4.
Yeah, they played so well in that Charlotte game. That fourth quarter was something, and we could talk about officiating, but I will not put an NBA or team employee on the spot in such a situation. So a lot of guys have played because of these injuries, and a lot of guys have been impressive that we didn't think would play very much, and you know, some guys that we thought would play a lot have been impressive. Has any one player stood out to you that has been far better than you thought they would be this year?
Well, I think the guy that has really adapted to his role is Justin Holiday. I was asked that question a little bit earlier today, and I talked about other players. And the more I thought about it, I really think Justin Holiday has been everything that you hoped he would be. You know, going into the game against Brooklyn, he hadn't shot it particularly well. I think he was about 35% from the field and maybe the low 30s, or he might have been 28, 29% from three. But I really like how he's sort of the glue guy. I mean, you know, Thad Young for 3 years was the glue to the team defensively. And while Justin Holiday is a different player than Thad Young, I really think that he's a guy that is very dependable out on the floor on both ends, whether it be the offensive end or the defensive end. And I just think he's been very solid. When Nate McMillan needs somebody defensively and he's had to guard a three or a four, and now he's starting at the two, I think he's been everything that you hoped he would be, and maybe even a little bit better.
Yeah, you mentioned the thing that I think has impressed me the most about Justin Holliday is that positional versatility, right? He's started at the two alongside his brother, which is also super awesome. He's played three, you know, alongside Warren at the four, McDermott or the two bigs, whoever. And then he's even played the four a little bit as a small ball. He was that first guy off the bench, I remember, almost as a power forward in that game that they started TJ Leaf and Goga together. So that's what I think has popped to me about him. And I kind of thought that he could do that, but just given that they've had so much in flux that they've needed him to do that, the fact that he's been able to fit in at any position and still make the lineup cohesive and work, I think he is the glue guy this year. And I actually hadn't thought of it like that until you just said it, but that is a great point.
Yeah. I just think, you know, he's the oldest Pacer. He's 30. He's been around.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is crazy. And, what's even crazier, Tony, is, he is the same. My oldest son will be 30. And that's when I start to go, wow, you know, this whole roster, you know, they all could be my sons. Now that's probably been the case for the last 10 years or so, but
I remember I went to a pre-draft workout and saw a guy with a birthday in the 2000s this year and just was what the heck?
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. But no, I think he's been a solid player. I mean, I think about a year ago, the Pacers go to Chicago and are very lucky to win on a Collison jump shot and a Miles Turner block in a game that Justin Holliday made like five or six threes. Played very well against the Pacers in Memphis last year. He's a double-figure scorer the last 2 years. Between he and TJ McConnell, who started the year, you know, really not in the – they were wearing gold jerseys through training camp, which means you have the blue team, the white team, and the gold team. These are two guys that have started almost 100 games each or better than that. So I just think that Justin's been I think, as good as advertised and even a little bit better.
You love the brother connection? It's my favorite thing on the court when they assist each other.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think we were prepared to see it as much this early.
You're right.
But no, it's been good. And I think it's been really good for Aaron to have his brother that he can lean on. I think Aaron can be a terrific player. There's no question about that. And I just think it's, you know, getting comfortable in his role. You know, the game against Brooklyn, the best he's played as a point guard, because I think really he's a scoring guard in a point guard's body. But I thought his decision-making and all the things that he did, especially against Brooklyn, they were outstanding.
That pass to Miles Turner that led to the dunk was just perfect. Read the defense coming at him, dropped it right in front of him.
No question. I mean, I think what we saw in the Brooklyn game was real growth for him because he had to play a different role. A year ago, when he played so much, when Oladipo got hurt in November, and I think he had five straight games in double figures, he wasn't playing the point. I mean, he was the off guard playing alongside either Darren Collison or Corey Joseph. It's a whole different situation when you're the one that's got to run the show. And I think this has been a great learning opportunity for him.
Yeah, that was, I think, easily the best game of his career. That was so impressive to me, and they needed it. So good for him to finally step up and show that. I loved JJ and Mark Monty both with the offhand comment of, you know, someone will ask him if this game gives him confidence, and he'll say, I've had confidence forever. No, he always says that to me too.
No, I mean, from day one when I met him, and I'll say the same about TJ Leaf. Now, TJ Leaf sometimes doesn't display the confidence that you would want on the floor. I think he's doing a better job of that. But these are two guys that have uber confidence. I mean, they are never going to tell you that they're not confident, and I think that's part their upbringing. I think for Aaron, it's just the fact that he's the fourth Holliday. He's a little brother, and he had to fight in the backyard with his sister and his two brothers, and heck, probably even his parents. Can you imagine the 3-on-3 games that they might have? he has a tremendous amount of confidence, and that's good to see.
So you brought up Leaf. I want to ask you about Leaf since you see him every day and see him play. You know, Malcolm Brogdon made the comment this summer that Leaf was really impressing him in the team's summer scrimmages or summer runs, whatever they were doing. And then the season starts and Leafs in the rotation and things aren't going as well. And now all of a sudden there's almost animosity, you know, amongst the fan base towards this guy. How have you felt like his season has gone? Do you feel like some of the criticisms are fair or premature? How, you know, just what are your thoughts on Leafs year so far?
Well, I think it seems each of the last 2 years, he's come into training camp and had an early injury. And that's exactly what happened this year. And so he was out of camp for about 2 or 3 days, you know, didn't play in the preseason early. And so I think it's almost like he falls behind and other guys play well. And then Nate rewards them with that opportunity. And, you know, it just takes some time for TJ to round into form. I think the biggest thing for him is as it is for any player, but it's consistency. I mean, let's go back to that Cleveland game on a Friday night where he had a double-double. What, he had 13 points, 15 rebounds. You're thinking, okay. Now, I'm not saying he's going to get 13 and 15 every night. And then he comes off the bench in the Chicago game and really struggles. Again, he is an uber-confident player that sometimes doesn't display it on the floor. I thought last night or Monday night, I thought he was very good. I thought he rebounded well. I thought he did a lot of good things. Those are the, I think that's what you need to see from TJ Leaf. You don't need to see 13 and 15, but you need to see come off the bench, give you 6 points, 4 or 5 rebounds, space the floor, be athletic. I think if he can focus on that and be more consistent, that'll go a long way for him. I think TJ's been a guy where he's played either very well or he hasn't played well enough, and that puts Nate McMillan a little bit in a quandary on a game-by-game basis, not knowing what he's going to get from TJ. But I think if he can play more like we saw him play against Brooklyn in those short stretches, because I made the comment, I thought his 5 or 6 minutes in the first half against Brooklyn were key. I think he was out there when the Pacers were extending that lead. If he can do those things, I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, I struggle with him a little now because coming out of UCLA and then his rookie year, he was this awesome shooter. And he was this clearly a power forward, you know, can run, hit the three, can be a between the arc kind of guy. And his defense had a ways to go. But, you know, the signs are there. Every rookie's defense sucks. Then you year two comes, and it's the opposite, where he's all of a sudden not good at shooting, and he gained all this muscle, so his shot's flatter. But he's awesome inside. He's getting all these rebounds. His athleticism is shining on the boards. He's better in the post. And then this year, his best game comes, lo and behold, when they need him to be the backup center. So for me, I just struggle knowing what his natural position is. But you just said something that I want to go back to. You said off the top of your head immediately that he had 13 and 15 against the Cavs, which is exactly right. Do you remember every number that is flashed in front of you?
I don't remember every number, but I mean, there are certain players that I remember. And I mean, let's be honest. I mean, that stands out because those are his numbers for the year. I mean, if you were to quiz me on Malcolm Brogdon, hey, what did he have against this team or that team? I wouldn't exactly know, but he's been so consistent. I can tell you what his numbers for the year are. Same thing, you know, Domas right now. I mean, what, 8 straight games of at least 13 rebounds. But the number for TJ really stood out because he hasn't done anything like that this year.
Do any numbers pop from your Butler days that you remember?
No. I mean, I probably need to pull out my old stat sheets, which I have.
Oh, that's cool.
I have them all. I mean, they're down in my basement, all filed away. When we moved this summer, I categorized everything, all my Pacer sheets, all my Fever sheets, all my Butler sheets. And my wife just shook her head. She goes, I can't believe these.
Do you have a favorite memory from your Butler days? I've never talked to you about those before.
Well, there are a number. You know, I started in 1989. I was the first marketing director. And so I took over at Butler when they had a whole whopping 15 season ticket holders. We were building from basically nothing as a Division I program. November of 1993, in fact, it was the very first game I ever did on television. I had two analysts with me, George McGinnis, who was my partner on Butler Radio, and John Laskowski. I did the TV for Butler, Indiana at Hinkle Fieldhouse. And one of the great headlines of all time in the Indianapolis Star Trice and Geis put Indiana on ice. And that was a huge win for Butler. And I think really told the program and the university, hey, we can do this. And so that was huge. Fast forward to 97, they went to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 35 years. And then, you know, I think for me, I was gone by the time they went to the Final Fours, but would have been 2003 when they won back-to-back games down in Birmingham, beating Mississippi State on a last-second shot, and then down big time to Rick Pitino and Louisville in the round of 32 and beating Louisville to go to the Sweet 16 for the first time ever. So, you know, I did over 500 games at Butler, but those memories of getting somewhere where they had never been, those were pretty special.
What's the biggest difference between college play-by-play and NBA play-by-play?
That's a great question. I just think the NBA game is so much faster. I haven't done a college basketball game for a number of years, but I'll go back early in my Pacers career. I got a call one day that Gus Johnson was not going to be able to make it to Bloomington, and they wanted to know on a Tuesday if on Wednesday night I could do Indiana-Ohio State. And I said, yeah, I can. And so, you know, I did a cram session, all that kind of stuff. And it was when Evan Turner played at Ohio State, and it was IU when they had Tom Pritchard and Daniel Moore, and, I mean, they had all the walk-ons. It was early in Tom Crean's coaching career. And I just remember sitting there. You know, now I've done two or three years of NBA, and it was just so slow. I mean, the shot clock, it's a longer shot clock. So, you know, and that's probably an unfair comparison because that was not a very good Indiana team. But I just think at the NBA level, these guys do unbelievable things, and I see it every night. And there are a lot of talented college players, but all of those players in the NBA were pretty much the best player on their college team. And so I think that tells you, you know, how those games are played. So I just think the game is so much faster. I don't know if it's as – sometimes the college game gets too physical. I think the NBA is a very physical league, but they're just faster, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're quicker. And so I think in that regard, that's the biggest difference.
Yeah, I watched a ton of college basketball when I was at IU, and I do not miss the slowness of the game, although I did love the IU team when I was there. Let's get back to the Pacers. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the one thing that's and I think at Bankers Life over the years that I've done it, there have been some outstanding atmospheres. I mean, the one thing you get, you know, at the college level at times, maybe not for the games now here in November where, you know, Indiana's playing Troy and those types of teams.
Right. But,
you know, some of those Big Ten matchups when it's Indiana-Purdue, Indiana-Michigan State, Indiana-Ohio State, or you go to Mackey. I mean, Mackey's an outstanding atmosphere. Butler, when they have it rolling. You know, those college atmospheres are really, really good. It's different. It's a little bit different than the NBA. No, I mean, I enjoy all levels of basketball. I mean, I played high school basketball. I played D3 basketball. My two older boys played high school basketball. I still, on the road, I'll watch a Wabash game online to follow the Little Giants. So I like all kinds of basketball, but I really enjoy broadcasting NBA basketball.
Well, I'm glad you landed where you love.
And
one of the best in the bit. You and Quinn kill it on the broadcast. You guys.
Well, thanks.
Back to the Pacers, looking ahead a little bit for my last actual basketball question. So after these 4 days off, hopefully everybody's, you know, relaxing and not overtraining themselves. What are you watching for this team in their next stretch of games?
Well, I think, you know, part of it's going to be the health. And then part of it's when they are healthy. And this is prior to Victor Oladipo coming back because we don't know when that's going to happen. But I'm basically talking about Lamb and Brogdon and McConnell coming back. Is what does Nate McMillan do with his rotations?
Oh, I do not envy him.
Because I think we all know, and I think a lot of coaches are this way, they like to play 9 or 10 players. I think it's going to be really hard. I was on the phone with Pat Boylan today, and we were going through it, and we got to 11. And I think all 11 could play and should play, but I don't know if it's possible to do that. So we'll just have to wait and see. I want to see this team continue to find itself offensively. I've been very impressed defensively. I think TJ Warren has done a tremendous job playing defense and having hands ready. I mean, here's a guy that, you know, was not thought of as a defensive player at Phoenix, but he is, you know, doing all the things that you want in a Pacers player. So, and then it's the schedule is going to get tougher. You've got the four straight at home and then five straight on the road. But this team has demonstrated now through the first seven, they're 3-4 on the road. I mean, if you can be around 500 on the road, you're going to have a really good season.
Yeah, no kidding. So far, so good in that way. Dream. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you this question. I thought about this today when I was at work. Can you do a Quinn impression for me on the show?
Can I do a Quinn impression? The only thing, and we haven't heard one for a while, I'd have to do like a smothered chicken. Smothered chicken! That's the best I can do.
That was
smothered chicken, partner!
You had to get the partner in. That was tremendous. I was hoping I could like describe a scenario, you know, like a ticky-tack foul, and then you have to respond like you're Quinn immediately. But that was tremendous. I didn't mean to put you on the spot like that, but
I responded.
I need him to do one of you now next time.
That's right.
Chris, you got anything else you would like to talk about?
Yeah, I guess I need a pointer from you, Tony, to know how do we get Quinn to give us a smothered chicken, because we have had some conversation with him. I thought we were going to have one in the last couple of games. I thought we might. I'm trying to think if we thought
the Robin Lopez block would get it.
Yeah, I did too. So we're 14 games in. We don't have one yet. So it seems to me that we're probably looking at only three or four, and I think the fans are a little bit more demanding than that. So
the bar with this team is it has to be Miles, because no one – like other guys get blocks. You know, they're a basketball team, but no one has like the Miles – it's not a block. It's like a volleyball spike it in your face and embarrass you kind of block. You know, Goga's blocks are like the dainty little, you know, he's really tall blocks, but Miles slams it. So what we need is Miles to be playing more often to get these blocks. Maybe that's why we haven't had one yet.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's very fair. I mean, since Miles has missed eight games, he's only played six?
Six. Yep.
Yeah. He's only played six. So we got a shot, but I continue that if I see one that I think was worthy, I'm going to bring it up to him and, you know, probe him a little bit, because I think the more we probe him, maybe we'll get closer to getting one. And there's nothing like a Quinn Buckner smothered chicken.
Well, so Ja Morant and Trae Young coming up, right? Those guys like to drive and are small. That seems like two great just swat it in your face opportunities.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, so anybody listening, if they have any pointers with how to get me to coax one out of him, let me know.
You have to ask him how he likes his chicken or something. I don't know. Maybe that's too obvious.
No, he's very secretive. I mean, we've tried to find out, you know, where this smothered chicken has come from, and no, we don't get any. We get no response or help from that. So
there's a podcast named after him now. He's got to do it for them.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Chris, I really appreciate you taking some time to come on and chat with me.
Oh, well, glad to do it, Tony, and hopefully we'll do it again sometime soon.
Absolutely. I don't think we'll have another 4-day break to pull it off, but I'm sure we can fit it in again.
Well, great to do it. Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Take care.
All right, bye.